Chapter 11 – Pusises, Superintendent of the Artisans of Saber. Pusises, the superintendent of the king's artisans, was present at the execution, perceiving that Ananias trembled as the necessary preparations for his death were being made. He said to him, "O old man, close your eyes for a little while and be of good courage, for you will soon behold the light of Christ." No sooner had he uttered these words than he was arrested and conducted before the king, and as he frankly avowed himself a Christian, and spoke with great freedom to the king concerning his opinion and the martyrs, he was condemned to an extraordinary and most cruel death, because it was not lawful to address the king with such boldness. The executioners pierced the muscles of his neck in such a manner as to extract his tongue. On the charge of some persons, his daughter, who had devoted herself to a life of holy virginity, was arraigned and executed at the same time. The following year, on the day on which the Passion of Christ was commemorated, and when preparations are being made for the celebration of the festival commemorative of his resurrection from the dead, Saper issued a most cruel edict throughout Persia, condemning to death all those who should confess themselves to be Christians. It is said that a greater number of Christians suffered by the sword, for the Magi sought diligently in the cities and villages for those who had concealed themselves, and many voluntarily surrendered themselves, lest they should appear, by their silence, to deny Christ. Of the Christians who were thus unsparingly sacrificed, many who were attached to the palace were slain, and amongst these was Azades, too, a eunuch, who was especially beloved by the king. On hearing of his death, Saper was overwhelmed with grief, and put a stop to the general slaughter of the Christians, and he directed that the teachers of religion should alone be slain. Chapter 12 – Darbuna, the sister of Simeon, and her martyrdom. About the same period, the queen was attacked with a disease, and Darbuna, the sister of Simeon the bishop, a holy virgin, was arrested with her servant, who shared in the same mode of life, as likewise a sister of Darbuna, who, after the death of her husband, abjured marriage, and led a similar career. The cause of their arrest was the charge of the Jews, who reported that they had injured the queen by their enchantments, on account of their rage at the death of Simeon. As invalids easily give credit to the most repulsive representations, the queen believed the charge, and especially because it emanated from the Jews, since she had embraced their sentiments, and lived in the observance of the Jewish rites, for she had great confidence in their veracity and in their attachment to herself. The Magi, having seized Darbuna and her companions, condemned them to death, and after having sawn them asunder, they fastened them up to poles and made the queen pass through the midst of the poles as a medium for turning away the disease. It is said that this Darbuna was beautiful and very stately in form, and that one of the Magi, having become deeply enamored with her, secretly sent a proposal for intercourse, and promised as a reward to save her and her companions if she would consent. But she would give no ear to his licentiousness, and treated the Magi with scorn, and rebuked his lust. She would rather prefer courageously to die than to betray her virginity. As it was ordained by the edict of Saper, which we mentioned above, that the Christians should not be slaughtered indiscriminately, but that the priests and teachers of the opinions should be slain, the Magi and Archmagi traversed the whole country of Persia, studiously maltreating the bishops and presbyters. They sought them especially in the country of Adiabn, a part of the Persian dominions, because it was wholly Christianized. Chapter 13 – Martyrdom of Saint Asepsimus and of his companions. About this period they arrested Asepsimus the bishop, and many of his clergy. After having taken counsel together, they satisfied themselves with the hunt after the leader only. They dismissed the rest after they had taken away their property. James, however, who was one of the presbyters, voluntarily followed Asepsimus, obtained permission from the Magi to share his prison, and spiritedly ministered to the old man, lightened his misfortunes as far as he was able, and dressed his wounds, for not long after his apprehension, the Magi had injuriously tortured him with raw thongs in forcing him to worship the sun, and on his refusal to do so had retained him again in bonds. Two presbyters named Athlas and James, and two deacons, by name Azidans and Abdissus, after being scourged most injuriously by the Magi, were compelled to live in prison, on account of their opinions. After a long time had elapsed, the great Archmagi communicated to the king the facts about them to be punished, and having received permission to deal with them as he pleased, unless they would consent to worship the sun, he made known this decision of Sapor's to the prisoners. They replied openly, that they would never betray the cause of Christ nor worship the sun. He tortured them unsparingly. Asepsimus persevered in the manly confession of his faith, till death put an end to his torments. Certain Armenians, whom the Persians retained as hostages, secretly carried away his body and buried it. The other prisoners, although not less scourged, lived as by a miracle, and as they would not change their judgment, were again put in bonds. Among these was Aethlas, who was stretched out while thus beaten, and his arms were torn out of his shoulders by the very great wrench, and he carried his hands about as dead and swinging loosely, so that others had to convey food to his mouth. Under this rule, an innumerable multitude of presbyters, deacons, monks, holy virgins, and others who served the churches and were set apart for its dogma, terminated their lives by martyrdom. The following are the names of the bishops, so far as I have been able to ascertain: Barbasimus, Pollus, Gadiabs, Sabinus, Maras, Mosius, John, Hormistas, Papas, James, Romas, Mares, Argas, Bocas, Abdas, Abdasus, John, Abramins, Agdalas, Sapors, Isaac, and Doises. The latter had been made prisoner by the Persians, and brought from a place named Zabd A.S. 1. He died about this time in defense of the dogma, and Merabds, a corpuscopus, and about 250 of his clergy, who had also been captured by the Persians, suffered with him. Chapter 14 – The Martyrdom of Bishop Mills and High's Conduct. 16,000 distinguished men in Persia suffer martyrdom under Sapor, besides obscure individuals. About this period Mills suffered martyrdom. He originally served the Persians in a military capacity, but afterwards abandoned that vocation, in order to embrace the apostolical mode of life. It is related that he was ordained bishop over a Persian city, and he underwent a variety of sufferings, and endured wounds and drawings, and that, failing in his efforts to convert the inhabitants to Christianity, he uttered imprecations against the city, and departed. Not long after, some of the principal citizens offended the king, and an army with 300 elephants was sent against them. The city was utterly demolished and its land was plowed and sown. Mills, taking with him only his wallet, in which was the holy book of the Gospels, repaired to Jerusalem in prayer. Thence he proceeded to Egypt in order to see the monks. The extraordinary and admirable works which we have heard that he accomplished are attested by the Syrians, who have written an account of his actions and life. For my own part, I think that I have said enough of him and of the other martyrs who suffered in Persia during the reign of Sapor, for it would be difficult to relate in detail every circumstance respecting them, such as their names, their country, the mode of completing their martyrdom, and the species of torture to which they were subjected, for they are innumerable. Since such methods are jealously affected by the Persians, even to the extreme of cruelty, I shall briefly state that the number of men and women whose names have been ascertained, and who were martyred at this period, have been computed to be 16,000, while the multitude outside of these is beyond enumeration, and on this account to reckon off their names appeared difficult to the Persians and Syrians and to the inhabitants of Edessa, who have devoted much care to this matter. Chapter 15 – Constantine writes to Sapor to stay the persecution of the Christians. Constantine the Roman Emperor was angry, and bore it ill when he heard of the sufferings to which the Christians were exposed in Persia. He desired most anxiously to render them assistance, yet knew not in what way to effect this object. About this time some ambassadors from the Persian king arrived at his court, and after granting their requests and dismissing them, he thought it would be a favorable opportunity to address Sapor in behalf of the Christians in Persia, and wrote to him, 1. Confessing that it would be a very great and forever indescribable favor, if he would be humane to those who admired the teaching of the Christians under him. There is nothing in their religion, said he, of a reprehensible nature. By bloodless prayers alone do they offer supplication to God, for he delighteth not in the outpouring of blood, but taketh pleasure only in a pure soul devoted to virtue and religion, so that they who believe these things are worthy of commendation. The emperor then assured Sapa that God would be propitious to him if he treated the Christians with lenity, and adduced the example of Valerian and of himself in proof thereof. He had himself, by faith in Christ, and by the aid of divine inclination, come forth from the shores of the Western Ocean, and reduced to obedience the whole of the Roman world, and had terminated many wars against foreigners and usurpers, and yet had never had recourse to sacrifices or divinations, but had for victory used only the symbol of the cross at the head of his own armies, and prayer pure from blood and defilement. The reign of Valerian was prosperous so long as he refrained from persecuting the church, but he afterwards commenced a persecution against the Christians, and was delivered by divine vengeance into the hands of the Persians, who took him prisoner and put him to a cruel death. It was in this strain that Constantine wrote to Sapa, urging him to be well disposed to this religion, for the emperor extended his watchful care over all the Christians of every region, whether Roman or foreign. Chapter 16. Eusebius and Theognis, who at the Council of Nice had assented to the writings of Arius, restored to their own sees. Not long after the Council of Nice, Arius was recalled from exile, but the prohibition to enter Alexandria was unrevoked. It shall be related in the proper place how he strove to obtain permission to return to Egypt. Not long after, Eusebius, bishop of Nicomedia, and Theognis, bishop of Nicaea, regained possession of their churches after expelling Amphion and Christos, who had been ordained in their stead. 2. They owed their restoration to a document which they had presented to the bishops, containing a retractation. "Although we have been condemned without a trial by your piety, we deemed it right to remain silent concerning the judgment passed by your piety. But as it would be absurd to remain longer silent, when silence is regarded as a proof of the truth of the calumniators, we now declare to you that we too agree in this faith, and after a diligent examination of the thought in the word consubstantial, we are wholly intent upon preserving peace, and that we never pursued any heresy, having proposed for the safety of the churches such argument, 3, as occurred to us, and having been fully convinced, and fully convincing those who ought to have been persuaded by us, we undersigned the creed, but we did not subscribe to the anathema, not because we impugned the creed, but because we did not believe the accused to be what he was represented to us. The letters we had received from him, and the arguments he had delivered in our presence, fully satisfying us that he was not such an one. Would that the Holy Synod were convinced that we are not bent on opposing, but are accordant with the points accurately defined by you, and by this document, we do attest our assent thereto. And this is not because we are wearied of exile, but because we wished to avert all suspicion of heresy, for if you will condescend to admit us now into your presence, you will find us in all points of the same sentiments as yourselves, and obedient to your decisions, and then it shall seem good to your piety to be merciful to him who was accused on these points and to have him recalled. If the party amenable to justice has been recalled and has defended himself from the charge made, it would be absurd, were we by our silence to confirm the reports that calumny had spread against us. We beseech you then, as befits your piety, dear to Christ, that you memorialize our emperor, most beloved of God, and that you hand over our petition, and that you counsel quickly what is agreeable to you concerning us. It was by these means that Eusebius and Theognis, after their change of sentiment, were reinstated in their churches. Chapter 17. On the death of Alexander, Bishop of Alexandria, at Hy's suggestion, Athanasius receives the throne, and an account of Hy's youth, how he was a self-taught priest, and beloved by Antony the Great. About this period, 1. Alexander, Bishop of Alexandria, when about to depart this life, left Athanasius as his successor, in accordance, I am convinced, with the divine will directing the vote upon him. It is said that Athanasius at first sought to avoid the honor by flight, but that he, although unwilling, was afterwards constrained by Alexander to accept the bishopric. This is testified by Apollinarius, the Syrian, too, in the following terms: "In all these matters much disturbance was excited by impiety, but its first effects were felt by the blessed teacher of this man, who was at hand as an assistant, and behaved as a son would to his father. Afterwards this holy man himself underwent the same experience, for when appointed to the episcopal succession he fled to escape the honor, but he was discovered in his place of concealment by the help of God, who had forecast by divine manifestations to his blessed predecessor, that the succession was to devolve upon him. For when Alexander was on the point of death, he called upon Athanasius, who was then absent. One who bore the same name, and who happened to be present, on hearing him call this way, answered him, but to him Alexander was silent, since he was not summoning this man. Again he called, and as it often happens, the one present kept still, and so the absent one was disclosed. Moreover, the blessed Alexander prophetically exclaimed, O Athanasius, thou thinkest to escape, but thou wilt not escape, meaning that Athanasius would be called to the conflict. Such is the account given by Apollinarius respecting Athanasius. The Arians assert that after the death of Alexander, the respective followers of that bishop and of Miletius held communion together, and 54 bishops from Thebes and other parts of Egypt assembled together, and agreed by oath to choose by a common vote the man who could advantageously administer the Church of Alexandria, but that 7 of the bishops, in violation of their oath, and contrary to the opinion of all, secretly ordained Athanasius, and that on this account many of the people and of the Egyptian clergy seceded from communion with him. For my part, I am convinced that it was by divine appointment that Athanasius succeeded to the high priesthood, for he was eloquent and intelligent, and capable of opposing plots, and of such a man the times had the greatest need. He displayed great aptitude in the exercise of the ecclesiastical functions and fitness for the priesthood, and was, so to speak, from his earliest years, self-taught. It is said that the following incident occurred to him in his youth, for it was the custom of the Alexandrians to celebrate with great pomp an annual festival in honor of one of their bishops named Peter, who had suffered martyrdom. Alexander, who then conducted the church, engaged in the celebration of this festival, and after having completed the worship, he remained on the spot, awaiting the arrival of some guests whom he expected to breakfast. In the meantime, he chanced to cast his eyes towards the sea, and perceived some children playing on the shore, and amusing themselves by imitating the bishop and the ceremonies of the church. At first he considered the mimicry as innocent, and took pleasure in witnessing it, but when they touched upon the unutterable, he was troubled, and communicated the matter to the chief of the clergy. The children were called together and questioned as to the game at which they were playing, and as to what they did and said when engaged in this amusement. At first they through fear denied, but when Alexander threatened them with torture, they confessed that Athanasius was their bishop and leader, and that many children who had not been initiated had been baptized by him. Alexander carefully inquired what the priest of their play was in the habit of saying or doing, and what they answered or were taught. On finding that the exact routine of the church had been accurately observed by them, he consulted the priests around him on the subject, and decided that it would be unnecessary to re-baptize those who, in their simplicity, had been judged worthy of the divine grace. He therefore merely performed for them such offices as it is lawful only for those who are consecrated to initiating the mysteries. He then took Athanasius and the other children, who had playfully acted as presbyters and deacons, to their own relations under God as a witness that they might be brought up for the church, and for leadership in what they had imitated. Not long after, he took Athanasius as his table companion and secretary. He had been well educated, was versed in grammar and rhetoric, and already when he came to man's estate, and before he attained the bishopric, he gave proof to those conversing with him of his being a man of wisdom and intellectuality. But when, on the death of Alexander, the succession devolved upon him, his reputation was greatly increased, and was sustained by his own private virtues and by the testimony of the monk. Antony the Great. This monk repaired to him when he requested his presence, visited the cities, accompanied him to the churches, and agreed with him in opinion concerning the Godhead. He evinced unlimited friendship towards him, and avoided the society of his enemies and opponents. Chapter 18. The Arians and Miletians confer celebrity on Athanasius, concerning Eusebius, and Hyas request of Athanasius to admit Arius to communion, concerning the term consubstantial. Eusebius Pamphilus and Astartheus, bishop of Antioch, create tumults above all the rest. The reputation of Athanasius was, however, especially increased by the Arians and Miletians, too. Although always plotting, they never appeared rightly to catch and make him a prisoner. In the first place, Eusebius wrote to urge him to receive the Arians into communion, and threatened, without writing it, to ill-treat him should he refuse to do so. But as Athanasius would not yield to his representation, but maintained that those who had devised a heresy in innovating upon the truth, and who had been condemned by the Council of Nice, ought not to be received into the church, Eusebius contrived to interest the emperor in favor of Arius, and so procured his return. I shall state a little further on how all these events came to pass. 3. At this period, the bishops had another tumultuous dispute among themselves, concerning the precise meaning of the term consubstantial. 4. Some thought that this term could not be admitted without blasphemy, that it implied the non-existence of the Son of God, and that it involved the error of Montanus and Sabius. Those, on the other hand, who defended the term, regarded their opponents as Greeks, or pagans, and considered that their sentiments led to polytheism. Eusebius, surnamed Pamphilus, and Astartheus, bishop of Antioch, took the lead in this dispute. They both confessed the Son of God to exist hypostatically, and yet they contended together as if they had misunderstood each other. Astartheus accused Eusebius of altering the doctrines ratified by the Council of Nicaea, while the latter declared that he approved of all the Nicaean doctrines, and reproached Astartheus for cleaving to the heresy of Sabius. Chapter 19. Synod of Antioch. Unjust deposition of Astartheus. Euphronius receives the throne. Constantine the Great writes to the synod and to Eusebius Pamphilus, who refuses the bishopric of Antioch. A synod having been convened at Antioch, Astartheus was deprived of the church of that city. 5. It was most generally believed that he was deposed merely on account of his adherence to the faith of the Council of Nicaea, and on account of his having accused Eusebius, Paulinus, bishop of Tyre, and Patrophilus, bishop of Scythopolis, whose sentiments were adopted by the Eastern priests, of favoring the heresy of Arius. The pretext resorted to for his deposition, however, was that he had defiled the priesthood by unholy deeds. His deposition excited so great a sedition at Antioch, that the people were on the point of taking up arms, and the whole city was in a state of commotion. This greatly injured him in the opinion of the emperor, for when he understood what had happened, and that the people of that church were divided into two parties, he was much enraged, and regarded him with suspicion as the author of the tumult. The emperor, however, sent an illustrious officer of his palace, invested with full authority, to calm the populace, and put an end to the disturbance, without having recourse to violence or injury. Those who had deposed Astartheus, and who on this account were assembled in Antioch, imagining that their sentiments would be universally received, if they could succeed in placing over the church of Antioch one of their own opinion, who was known to the emperor, and held in repute for learning and eloquence, and that they could obtain the obedience of the rest, fixed their thoughts upon Eusebius Pamphilus for that see. They wrote to the emperor upon this subject, and stated that this course would be highly acceptable to the people. He had, in fact, been sought by all the clergy and laity who were inimical to Astartheus. Eusebius, however, wrote to the emperor refusing the dignity. The emperor approved of his refusal with praise, for there was an ecclesiastical law prohibiting the removal of a bishop from one bishopric to another. He wrote to the people and to Eusebius, adopting his judgment and calling him happy, because he was worthy to hold the bishopric not only of one single city, but of the world. The emperor also wrote to the people of the Church of Antioch concerning like-mindedness, and told them that they ought not to desire the bishops of other regions, even as they ought not to covet the possessions of others. In addition to these, he dispatched another epistle to the synod, in private session, and similarly commended Eusebius as in the letter to him for having refused the bishopric, and being convinced that Euphronius, a presbyter of Cappadocia, and George of Arethusa were men approved in creed, he commanded the bishops to decide for one or other of them, or for whomsoever might appear worthy of the honor, and to ordain a president for the Church of Antioch. On the receipt of these letters from the emperor, Euphronius was ordained, and I have heard that Eustathius bore this unjust calumny calmly, judging it to be better, as he was a man who, besides his virtues and excellent qualities, was justly admired on account of his fine eloquence, as is evidenced by his transmitted works, which are highly approved for their choice of words, flavor of expression, temperateness of sentiments, elegance and grace of narration. Chapter 20. Concerning Maximus, who succeeded Macarius in the See of Jerusalem. About this time Mark, 1, who had succeeded Sylvester, and who had held the episcopal sway during a short period, died, and Julius was raised to the See of Rome. Maximus succeeded Macarius in the bishopric of Jerusalem. 2. It is said that Macarius had ordained him bishop over the church of Diospolis, but that the members of the church of Jerusalem insisted upon his remaining among them. For since he was a confessor, and otherwise excellent, he was secretly chosen beforehand in the approbation of the people for their bishopric, after that Macarius should die. The dread of offending the people and exciting an insurrection led to the election of another bishop over Diospolis, and Maximus remained in Jerusalem, and exercised the priestly functions conjointly with Macarius, and after the death of this latter, he governed that church. It is, however, well known to those who are accurately acquainted with these circumstances, that Macarius concurred with the people in their desire to retain Maximus, for it is said that he regretted the ordination of Maximus, and thought that he ought necessarily to have been reserved for his own succession on account of his holding right views concerning God and his confession, which had so endeared him to the people. He likewise feared that, at his death, the adherents of Eusebius and Patrophilus, who had embraced Arianism, would take that opportunity to place one of their own views in his see, for even while Macarius was living, they had attempted to introduce some innovations. But since they were to be separated from him, they on this account kept quiet,